Ryan Dixon and Rory Boylan host Tape to Tape, the hockey podcast by Sportsnet.
An efficient night for Braden Holtby, swollen goalposts behind him. And Mum doesn't have to worry about being nervous right now. Well, the Washington Capitals are going to Vegas. One win away from the Stanley Cup.
Welcome to Tape to Tape, T2T. I'm Ryan Dixon. I'm a writer for Sportsnet.ca. With me in the booth, as always, Sportsnet's NHL editor, Rory Boylan.
Oh my God, Ryan. The Washington Capitals, Alex Ovechkin, almost Stanley Cup champion.
Well, as our old co-worker and friend at the Hockey News, Brian Costello, just tweeted, Ovi, cups is almost cups, playing off his fabulous cups is cups quotes from way back when. Yeah, one win away. We are obviously going to spend 90% of this podcast talking about what is going on with Ovechkin and the Washington Capitals leading the Cup Final 3-1 after consecutive wins in D.C. dropped the first game of the final. And we're also going to chat a little about the big news in Islanders land. Not a huge surprise, probably Lou Lamoriello going in there and uninstalling Garth Snow and coach Doug Weight, who at this point we don't know in what capacity they're staying with the Islanders, but apparently will remain on. I'm always
curious how
that works. But yes, let's start with the cup, and let's start with the fact that it's getting hot in here, man. This cup final might almost be over, but it is definitely starting to boil over. It got real chippy there in the third period of Washington's win in game four, to the point that I was sitting there thinking, when's the last time you're watching the cup final and thought, this could go off the rails?
Yeah.
Like, it really had the feeling of a game, and you're an old ref, where it just felt like everything was in play there, from a guys coming off the bench and mixing it up, or at least everyone on the ice get a dance partner kind of thing.
I don't think the reffing has been fantastic through these playoffs, but if we're going to criticize them, I think we need to point out when they do a good job. And the play I have in mind at the end of the last game was dying seconds. Ryan Reeves is on the ice, dying minutes. Obviously, he's out there to cause some trouble, and he goes into the corner and goes to hit a Washington defenseman, wasn't going to make it, so he sticks out his elbow, takes a swipe at his head, and missed, thank goodness. And then he skates down the other end of the ice, and he's slashing Devon Smith-Pelly the whole way. They get into something right there, and the referee immediately acknowledged that something was going on here, blows the play dead, gives the penalties, and nips that in the bud before it could have gotten out of hand. Because if he lets that play go, I mean, the slash was something that's hit or miss the rest of the season. If he lets that play go, it's just going to get out of hand. It's going to keep snowballing and snowballing and getting worse. So it was surprising. I think it's a number of things. I think it's, you know, it's a Stanley Cup final, obviously. We're getting right down to it. Vegas is feeling the pinch a little bit, and they haven't felt this before.
Literally all year, right?
Yeah. No.
Basically, things have gone Vegas's way since the start of the season in October.
Yep.
And all of a sudden, in the span of a week, the team has gone from being up 1-0 and kind of saying, well, this is what we do, to boom, not only are they now one loss from being eliminated, they come out in that game and James Neal hits the post on one of those plays that it's almost harder to imagine how the puck stayed out than could go in. Tuck hit the post before that. There's frustration building from there. And I'm sure all of a sudden a sense of this is getting away from us.
Yeah, you know, there's some regression coming here for the Vegas Golden Knights. I think everybody expects some sort of a fall back to the pack next year. I mean, if you look at that Pacific Division, there's a lot of teams that could make a charge. Even the ones in Canada, Edmonton, Calgary, that didn't make the playoffs, ripe to come back up. So I think everybody's expecting some kind of a comeback for Vegas here. guys like William Karlsson aren't going to keep shooting 24% and score 40-plus goals. And maybe it's just starting to happen for this team now. And when you're talking about losing some of that luck and regressing, it's plays like that. You know, shots that would have gone in before are now hitting the post. Braden Holtby has been fantastic, obviously, for the Washington Capitals. They've been able to overcome. Vegas has some really good goaltending in the past, but now it's just catching up to them. And it's the law of averages. Everything is just kind of coming back down to even. They're a team that had a very high PDO, too. Even Marc-Andre Fleury, I mean, he's clearly been a fantastic goalie through his entire career. He's going to be a Hall of Famer someday, but he came into these finals with a save percentage at .947, which was tracking to be one of, if not the best, in Stanley Cup playoff history. It was the best since Jacques Plante, I believe, in 1969, 68 or 69, and now it's completely fallen off the map. He's below 900 now, so all of this is kind of coming together. It's just bad luck at the absolute wrong time for the Vegas Golden Knights, and they're playing a team that's kind of figured out how to beat them on offense and get that puck passed across the crease sideways across that Royal Road and get Marc-Andre Fleury moving to create some goal scoring chances.
Yeah, I don't think anyone is ready to lay a lot of blame at the feet of Fleury.
No.
Though this hasn't been his finest hour, it seems to be at least just as much about Washington getting a moving and being able to do things that other teams couldn't do against Vegas or didn't try to do.
It really seems to me that it's just catching up to them. You can't put this on Fleury, even though his numbers aren't very good. If you're going to put it on Fleury, I mean, they wouldn't be here without Marc-Andre Fleury.
Yeah.
You know, he has been their MVP to this point. But the fact that his numbers have dropped off so much makes that conversation a little bit more difficult for him. It's not on anybody, really. Honestly, I think it's great coaching. Barry Trotz is a guy who doesn't have a contract for next year, but throughout his career has been a fantastic coach who has been able to get teams to play within some kind of a structure. I think Washington has been better on defense than some teams Vegas has faced. They've been excellent blocking shots. As you know, that's a hallmark of Trotz's career, is how he's got his teams to play on defense. And I think back to the Dale Hunter coached Washington Capitals and how that team really tightened down on defense and gave them a good shot to win the cup, didn't get by the second round. It's just everything kind of coming, the law of averages kicking in for the Vegas Golden Knights versus a team that is game playing them very, very well, matching them up very well, and it's proving to be too much for them.
And getting some contributions from guys we haven't really spoken about. And in the case of someone like Kempney, someone who was scratched a dozen straight games in his earlier iteration as a Chicago Blackhawk this year. I mean, what can you say about the way some of those guys on the Caps have, I mean, in that case, I think we can almost say come out of nowhere, but yep. I mean, you don't get to the Cup final without everyone pulling on the rope, but Washington has definitely gotten some contributions from guys we did not have circled before the start of the playoffs.
Yeah, and the reason why it's so surprising that this is the Washington Capitals team to finally get through is that they're coming off 2 years where they were all in. All the resources were on this roster. They had plenty of, you know, experience, talent, lines 1 through 4, all the defense pairs with Braden Holtby behind everything. And they lost some guys because of the salary cap over the summer. Justin Williams, Marcus Johansson. And they were left with kind of a hole back on their third and fourth lines. And it was that the conventional wisdom was, well, they have to take a step back. They just don't have the talent that they've had in the past. And they've gotten here because of the great defense and the great goaltending. But as you mentioned, Michael Kempney, yet another example of many of really under the radar, small additions working out at the trade deadline. That somebody who was a healthy scratch by the Blackhawks comes in, plays some big minutes, a good shutdown guy. He's never going to put up a ton of points for you, but he just frustrates you on defense. And he's been a big factor. Brett Connolly scored 2 goals in the Stanley Cup final. Andre Burakovsky, who I think a lot of people had pegged for a bit of a breakout season for him, and it absolutely did not happen. He scored 2 goals in Game 7 of the Eastern Conference Final there, which was a huge turning point for the Capitals as well. I mean, Tom Wilson, I don't know if he's a bit player. I mean, he's not a higher echelon skill player, but he's been a factor in this series and in just about every series too. And Jacob Varana, another young guy who I think the team has a lot of plans for in his future, he's been getting a lot of chances. He's only scored 1 goal, I think. It hasn't paid off yet, but he's been getting a ton of chances, a ton of high quality chances, and you just got to think that it's going to come for them at some point. So these guys that really were kind of written off and not really talked about or thought about too much as depth players in this team have really come up for the Washington Capitals and made a huge difference, and especially when you look at Vegas and how much they really rely, for all we talk about how much depth they have, how much they actually rely on their top line to score them goals. Well, now Washington has a couple different lines that they can throw out and be pretty productive.
So what now? If Vegas going home, we all know the story of the Golden Knights on home ice. You have to believe they're going to come out flying. If they come out the way they did in Game 4, they're probably going to be up 2-0 in the first 5 minutes just based on a little better puck luck. Do you think Game 4 was sort of the dagger, so to speak, from Washington where they really just took control and will now close it out? Or do you think we're getting at least two more games in this series?
It's not over yet. Washington, as we know, can blow tough
to,
series.
Tough to put a ton of faith in the Capitals, isn't it, in this
they
position?
Have blown 3-1 series advantages 5 times, which is more than any other North American pro sports team. So right there, you know, all those past years, of course, don't mean anything, different players and everything like that. But this is in some of their minds, I think, especially the guys who have been there and been through some of these disappointments before. And as you said, like Vegas has... It's not that they've been playing poorly. No, not at all. They could have easily got out in front by 2 or 3 goals, and then all of a sudden the series looks different. The rest of that game is going to look different. What we're talking about is going to be completely different. So if they can come out hot and actually convert on some of those goals, I could see the series absolutely coming back to Washington. And you just can't count out this Vegas team. They're the way that they've played and everything that they've overcome to get to this point, I think, is a reason why you just need to point at that and say you can't ever count these guys out. Don't underestimate them.
Okay, Rory, you brought it up earlier. I wanted to ask you, who do you think does have the inside track on the Conn Smythe? As noted, you know, Fleury was being bandied about as, you know, he had one hand on this thing coming into the series. That hand is slipping off. Have to believe it's Ovechkin or Kuznetsov. It's really a two-horse race from the Washington side of things, and obviously it's looking more and more like it's going to be a Capital. Do you have your money on the playoffs leading scorer, Evgeny Kuznetsov, or on the guy who is still tied, just tied, for the goal-scoring lead with who else in the final? Nobody else in the final. Mark Scheifele, 14 goals for Ovechkin, 14 for Winnipeg's Scheifele, who went out in the semifinal. But yeah, which Russian are you backing?
Boy, it is really close here. Both of them have a chance to set new records for the salary cap era, too. Ovechkin is one goal shy of Sidney Crosby's 15 goals that he scored in 2008-2009, and that's the most since the cap came in the 05-06 season. And Kuznetsov right now has 31 points in 23 games, which is 5 shy of Evgeny Malkin's record of 36 points. So he's probably going to need more than one game to be able to do that. Will likely fall short. Ah, it's such a tight call. I mean, my heart says I want it to go to Ovechkin. I mean, that would just be the perfect way to top this all off, right? He finally gets to the Penguins, finally gets to the Cup, wins it, and takes home the Conn Smythe. I mean, there's nothing left to doubt about this guy if he can also take home the Conn Smythe. Not that there is anything to begin with anyway, but honestly, if I'm voting with my head, which the writers I assume will be doing, it's going to Kuznetsov for me.
Oh, yeah? Yeah.
I think he's been such an electric player all the time. I think there have still been times in games where Ovechkin has disappeared a little. He hasn't gotten as many shots as he normally does, and it's not really a knock on him. It's other teams focusing in on him and whatever. Kuznetsov, to me, hasn't really slowed down like that. He's noticeable in every game he steps into, and I love it.
And he's playing hurt. Like,
yeah, exactly.
I mean, I'm sure
exactly.
more guys than we know, but he's one of the ones we know for sure is dinged up.
Yeah. So it really is a close race. And, you know, depending on what happens in Game 5 or any other game that might happen to come after that one, you know, I think that's going to be the determining factor. I think the prevailing opinion is that to get the Conn Smythe, to consider a guy for the Conn Smythe, 50% of his resume comes in what he did in the first 3 rounds, and the other 50% comes in what he did in the Stanley Cup final. So really, if this thing goes for more than 5 games, goes to Game 6 or 7, you still have a couple games here where both of these guys, maybe even Fleury, can do something that really puts them over the top. But right now, it is really, really tight between the two. I'm leaning a little bit more towards Kuznetsov, but I really want Ovechkin to win this thing, man. I really, really want him to get it all.
That is definitely the storybook ending if, as you mentioned, he skates off with all the hardware. Is John Carlson going to have just as many hot and heavy suitors come July 1 as John Tavares if they both make it to the open market?
Boy, oh boy. I mean, Washington cannot let that happen. After everything they lost last year, you've got a salary cap that's going to go up by at least $3 million, maybe as much as $7 million. You have to sign this guy. You have to throw the money at him that you need. I mean, as much as Orlov and Kempney have been, you need John Carlson to drive some offense from this blue line. That's something that the rest of that blue line doesn't do so well. That's his number one strength. If he does go to market, though, I'm really curious to see what he gets. The highest cap hit among any defenseman in the NHL right now is PK Subban at $9 million. As we know, a year from now, Erik Karlsson, Drew Doughty, maybe even before that if they re-sign, are going to come up probably above that. The whole market is going to be changed here. Connor McDavid's deal last summer is going to change it for forwards. He's making 12.5 against the cap now, which is a high. So what's that going to mean for the forwards that are on the market? John Tavares leading the way. Karlsson can set a new market for defensemen here. If he hits that open market, everybody's going to want a guy who can skate and move the puck and get points and who's a Stanley Cup winner, of course, if they can finish this thing off. So to me, Washington's got to use the leverage of being able to offer that extra year, go 8 years, which other teams cannot do, to get out in front of this, lock down this contract as quickly as they can after this Cup final. Because if you get to that negotiating window and Karlsson is talking to these other teams, he might get a sense for, you know, I can get money and more of an opportunity elsewhere and feel pretty good about that too.
Yeah, I mean, I would think his opportunities with Washington, it's not like they're flush with, you know, top-rate defensemen. Like, he would think he's, you know, they can probably come to him with, I mean, like you said, the extra year, but also you're the guy here, so we'll see.
But, I mean, who's going to come to John Carlson with that same kind of pitch and say he's not the guy? I think there are a lot of teams, like even Toronto, if Toronto was in on him, he's the guy here. I think he can play up there with Morgan Riley or whatever, but he's going to get paid more money than Morgan Riley if you're signing him as a UFA.
Yeah.
So he's your guy. I think that's got to be the number one pitch that these teams make at him. And I think there's just a ton of teams that can make that exact pitch to him.
Well, speaking of, maybe the Leafs will talk to him. That guy we already mentioned. John Tavares, easy transition here. When Lou Lamoriello left his post as a senior advisor with the Leafs to head up the New York Islanders, I think it was certainly fair to wonder if Garth Snow's days with the organization, or at least in the GM's chair, were numbered. Doug Weight, as head coach, maybe you thought had a better chance of sticking around. Today, news coming down that they have both been moved out of those positions. We will see in what capacity they remain with the organization and for how long, but what is your fairly instant reaction to the news that Lou is running the show on Long Island?
There's finally some accountability there, eh? I mean, this guy has been in the GM chair since 2006. He stepped right into it from being a backup goalie in the NHL. I don't even think he made his retirement announcement until he was hired on as the general manager. And just, they weren't able to build on the promise. You know, when they got John Tavares first overall, that was the player that they could build this organization around. They did take some strides along the way.
Yeah.
They beat the Florida Panthers in round one of the Stanley Cup playoffs just a couple years ago. And, of course, John Tavares was the big hero in that series with the overtime goal to move them on. But there's just been a lot of failures along the way. You know, they're going to take a lot of heat for how they've developed Josh Hosang, but also guys like Ryan Pulock didn't get very much opportunity, although he's going to be a UFA, and I think he's going to fit in with some teams this year. You know, things like letting Kyle Okpozo go, things like this, when they should have been moving towards a Stanley Cup. It seems Garth Snow and the organization always had one foot in trying to win now, but never taking the foot out of keeping your eye on that future. It was always, you always had to have an emphasis on, okay, well, what draft picks, what prospects are we going to have so that we know we're going to be in an okay position 3, 4, 5 years from now. They never did away with that and said, okay, how can we live in the moment now? How can we win this and push this thing forward right now with what we've got and bet on what we have? So Lou Lamoriello comes in. You know, any other GM in the NHL is going to be fired long before now if they've done what Garth Snow has done. So it's nice that Lamoriello comes in and gives some accountability back to the organization here. Move on from him. Now Lou is in charge. He can pick the coach that he wants. I'm a little bit surprised they let go of Wade after just one season, especially since it seems like he had a good relationship with Tavares. So, you know, I'm sure stories are going to come out about that. That could change the whole dynamic of this negotiation, too. And maybe they're just ready to move on from Tavares if that's the case.
Well, yeah, that's one of the thoughts I had was maybe Lou has got there, assessed the situation, and realized, I think Tavares is gone, or I know Tavares is gone.
Yep.
And that being the case, I'm not keeping these guys, in particular, the coach who he once lived with when Tavares first got there. You know, that's, I'm wiping the slate clean and we're starting anew. Who knows?
And then if that's the case, it's a good thing that they kept both of those first round picks and didn't trade one of them for instant help at the trade deadline. You know, either of them could have hit in the draft lottery. Of course, they have Calgary's from the Hamonic trade. But at least if you move on from Tavares, I would imagine you're trading him for whatever you can get after the Stanley Cup final is done to a team that can have his negotiating rights. And then from there, you just kind of start again. You got two first round picks this year. You got some decent prospects still coming
up. Well, you got Barzal at the top of the lineup. I mean, it could be worse.
Changes for Matt Barzal now, though. If he is the
he's
going to be the number one center. He's the only real top end threat in the Islanders organization there. So teams are going to focus right in on him. You know, what does that do for his production and everything? You know, talk about sophomore sickness and all that stuff all the time too. So he seems ripe to be affected by that if the Islanders come back even thinner next year. But on one hand, it's good that they're taking a step towards accountability. On the other, it really is a signal that, maybe they're going to take a step back again before they can take a step forward.
All right, Rory, the next time we are in this booth, we will know for sure if Ovi did, in fact, get his cup, or if there is some Vegas crazy comeback that derailed another Caps seeming victory. My goodness, there has been a lot of crushed dreams in DC, but yeah, they're certainly looking good. And boom, draft time, free agency, kind of the most wonderful time of the year in a sense. I say that for first round of playoffs. I say that when the season starts, but I love the hot stove too.
Yeah, I mean, if you love the trade deadline, that's what the draft has become, right? Post Stanley Cup, a lot of trades happen. You remember 2 years ago, you had the craziest 23 minutes in hockey history. Your Subban and Hall get traded. Stamkos re-signs. Last year, it was 4 days after the Cup was awarded that Montreal traded Sergachev to Tampa Bay for Jonathan Drouin. And then you had the expansion draft, which we don't have to deal with this year, but what's going to happen at the draft this year? I mean, there seem to be a lot of teams that could be open to making moves. Who's going to go number two? Who's Ottawa going to take? Who's Montreal going to take? A lot of intrigue around the Canadian teams. You got a buyout period in there, too, at the end of June. And then, boom, free agency hits on July 1 and some big names that might find new homes then.
That is all to say we are going to have tons to talk about after the final wraps here on the Tape to Tape podcast. Make sure you check it out. Subscribe in iTunes. Go to sportsnet.ca. Follow Rory on Twitter at Rory Boylan, myself at Dixon on Sports, and check back soon for more glass rattling hockey action on Tape to Tape.